Today's presenter is Fazwa Baha. She has been a modeler and monitor and publishing service reporter since January 2005. In this capacity, she has worked closely with development and clients in order to understand and resolve the technical issues clients face while using WebSphere Business Monitor, WebSphere Business Modeler, and Publishing Server. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Fazwa.
Thanks, Elijah. Thanks, everybody, for joining. As you can see, the title is WebSphere Business Monitor version 6.1, Installation Scenarios and Troubleshooting. My agenda today is to first cover the installation scenarios. Now, when you go about installing Monitor, there you have some options. You can install it on a single server environment and a distributed environment, and also there is an option of installing the UTE environment, and I won't be covering that in today's session. So this is just for production systems with single server or a distributed environment. After going over the installation scenarios, I'll discuss some troubleshooting scenarios, things that can go wrong, how to fix them, and finally a checklist as to things you should look out for when you install Monitor version 6.1. After that, the next topic is the System Integration Bus, the SIB. We'll go over how to configure it, and again, some troubleshooting scenarios, things that can go wrong, how to fix them, some causes, and then a checklist, things to check once you've installed the SIB. The third topic is LDAP security. We'll talk about how to enable LDAP security, be it with Active Directory or Tivoli Directory Server. We'll talk a little bit more about Monitor data security, which is a new concept in version 6.1 of Monitor. We'll also finally talk about some troubleshooting scenarios with security, and then finally some general guidelines on troubleshooting and how to go about troubleshooting your issues with Monitor, whether they're related to security or the SIB or not. And in the end, of course, we'll open the lines up for a question and answer session. All right, so installation, the single server scenario. The single server scenario is fairly straightforward. You have your server components, which consist of your Monitor server admin console, which resides on a WAS version 6.1. In the server components, you'll have your Monitor action services, your Monitor data security. And in the dashboard components, you have an optional WebSphere portal version 6.01. Now, previously, portal was not optional. It was required for version 6.02 of Monitor. But with 6.1, portal becomes optional. You can use the web dashboard components and kind of almost do away with portal. However, the advantages of using WebSphere portal is, of course, all the portal functionality, the collaboration, the more feasibility. Of course, the drawbacks are the portal overhead. Now, do note that portal resides in WAS version 6.02. So you have WAS version 6.1 for your monitor, and if you're installing portal, that would be in WAS 6.02. Also, the AlphaBlocks components are optional for your portal. You can also install the AlphaBlocks component for just the web dashboard. In your dashboard components, you also have the REST proxy. This is, of course, for your portlet-based dashboards. The third component in your single server environment is, of course, your database. Previously, we had two databases for Monitor, the Monitor database and the DataMart database. Now there's just one. Data movement services work within this one database, so things are a little more simple that way. Moving on to the next slide, distributed servers. This is a more common scenario with our customers. There are a few ways to work this distributed server environment. There are a few ways you can actually distribute the components. Let's talk about the Monitor server component. This could reside on one box, your WAS 6.1, and then, of course, the Monitor server installation. The second component is a dashboard. This could reside on a separate server altogether. You could install your portal or not install your portal, just include your web dashboards. Then the third component is a CEI server. Now, the CEI server could optionally be a part of your Monitor server. So you could have Monitor server and the CEI server installed on the same machine. Alternatively, you could install it on a separate machine as well, and then you could have it clustered, and you can get all fancy with that. Your CEI server could be version 6.02 or it could be version 6.1. Monitor 6.1 can work with both those versions. Typically, we see customers have a dedicated database server. Optionally, it can be part of your monitor server. Theoretically, you could also make it part of your dashboard server, but it would probably make more sense to have it reside on the monitor server, because that way, when monitor is actually processing events, it's accessing the database, your transactions would be much faster. Now, while you're going about installing all of this, you would use, of course, the installation wizard. Now, the installation wizard, just a couple of things I'd like to note, are, first of all, the pre-install utility. When you're installing on a single server, the pre-install utility is your buddy. It is your pal. What it does is, basically, it asks you where the binaries are for all your components and then neatly copies all the binaries into a directory structure that the monitor installation wizard will know and understand. If you go about trying to unzip and create that directory structure yourself, you'll give yourself a headache, which is easily avoidable with the pre-install utility. Now, on the distributed servers, the pre-install utility becomes a little tricky because now you're installing various components and on various machines, and it may or may not serve your purpose. Typically, with a distributed server, what you would end up doing is first install the database outside of the monitor installation wizard. Then you would install your portal and your alpha blocks. In that order. Now, what happens is if you go out of order with your portal and alpha blocks and your databases, you'd run into some issues, and we'll discuss that in a little more detail as we move forward. So there are a few things that you would have to do manually if you are in a distributed environment. Your database, portal, alpha blocks, these would need to be laid down, and you'd have to note that your portal would have to be version 6.0.1.1. If it's version 6.0 or 6.0.1, as far as the installation wizard is concerned, you have no portal at all. And the same goes for the monitor server. Version WAS should be WAS 6.1.0.13. It could also be version 6.1.0.15, but there are some hiccups with that. We'll talk about that in a while. All right. So this covers the two installation scenarios and a little bit about the pre-install utility and the installation wizard. All right. So now we're going to talk about some troubleshooting scenarios. So in slide 5, cannot run the launchpad on AIX. Now, when you see this error, you kind of get disbalanced, and you know it seems like it's a big issue. It points you to this tech note, and my recommendation is to actually just avoid the tech note, go into the WBM folder of your working directory, and just run the install wizard from there. That would actually save you a bit of a headache from there. And the same goes for the pre-install utility. You would get the same sort of error when you try to run the pre-install utility due to the same reason. It's a known issue with AIX, and a good workaround is to just go into the WBM folder and run the install wizard. Typically, if you're installing on a distributed environment, you probably won't use the pre-install utility anyways. Right, next slide. IBM Java won't start on Linux. This is also a known issue, a documented issue on Linux. It happens when you have SE Linux not set to permissive. So what you would have to do is log in as a root user and set SE Linux to permissive. Once that is done, then your IBM Java will be able to start. Now note, if your IBM Java isn't able to start, then that means your install wizard won't start and you probably won't get very far. So to avoid this, you would have to follow these steps, log on as a root user, set SE Linux to permissive, your IBM Java will be able to start, and you will be able to move forward. Moving forward, empty database created. Now, by far, during the installation scenarios and installing monitor, one of the most easiest things to go wrong, or the most common thing that goes wrong, is a database. Sometimes the database isn't created, sometimes it's created and it's empty. So there are various things that can go wrong. Now, when you're installing monitor, if you provide, and this is a new installation, what happens is it doesn't check for the password validity. So you provide the correct username, But in this scenario, you provided an invalid DB2 password. What happens is the database is created, but when you run the WBM, the IVT for monitor, the installation verification test, it fails, saying wrong password. So essentially, none of your infrastructure will work. It won't be able to connect to the database, and you'll be stuck. Now, there's a good workaround for this. A good way to go about it is to log onto your admin console for WAS, browse to the resources, click on JDBC data sources, and there is a monitor database there. Monitor data source there. You click on the database, click on the J2C authentication data. You'll find there a monitored JDBC alias. You update the password, you click OK, and you try a test connection. So if you have your IVT failing the test database test connection, you would essentially log on to the admin console and do a test connection on your data sources over there. Now, like I said, the causes of this scenario happening would be because if it's a new database being created on the machine, the installation wizard won't validate your password. Now, the installation verification test is your friend. That is a good way to verify if all your components have been installed correctly and if everything is working, at least from a connection standpoint. Now, the second scenario on slide 8 is wrong password entered for the database. Now, after going through the installation wizard, it seems like everything was fine. However, the database isn't created. So it's from a symptomatic point of view, it seems like it was a successful install. However, when you run the IVT, like I said, the IVT is your friend, it will report a problem with the database. It seems like either the database isn't there or it's incorrect. Now, there are various reasons why this could happen. Typically, we've seen that if you're trying and failing and trying and failing with your installations with monitor, you might have some leftover installation of the database. So perhaps you have a leftover alias from previous install or maybe another install altogether that has the same name as monitor. Or you may have a remote database that's cataloged with the same name. Or perhaps you just didn't drop the database the last time it was installed, and you have the same alias or the same database either existing on the machine, either just the alias or remote. In each case, you would need to rectify the situation. You either need to drop the database, remove your alias, and uncatalog any remote databases with the same name. Once you've done that, you would recreate the monitor database, and then you would be able to move on. So good thing to keep in mind, if you're going through a trial and error process with monitor installation, do remember to drop the database and do some cleanup there because that is not done automatically. No database is dropped. All right. So the installation checklist for monitor is twofold. There's the monitor server portion of it, and then the dashboard server portion of it. So starting with the monitor server portion of it, the first thing you want to do after you've installed Monitor is to ensure that your applications have been created. There are four applications: the Action Services, DMS Services, REST Services, and the Web Dashboard. You want to ensure that each of these applications is running. If it's not running or it's unable to run, you have some issues and you want to go back, check your logs, and see why that is. Next thing to check is in your REST Services, you want to check the security roles to user group mapping. Here you'll find one role called the monitor users, and you want to make sure that you have all authenticated checked. If you don't have this checked, you will have some trouble logging into your web dashboards and viewing your models. Next thing is your JDBC provider. One is created on the monitor service called the monitor DB provider, and corresponding to this, there are three JDBC providers and data sources, three data sources. You may want to check these data sources, test the connection. Now, if for some reason, some of these components are not installed correctly or something bizarre went wrong during your installation, these are the points you want to check to ensure that your monitor installation is complete and successful. So these are this is a good checklist if you're trying to retrace your installation steps manually. Okay. Continuing with the monitor server installation checklist, you want to ensure that your basic artifacts have been created. Your monitor data movement service, your monitor security, monitor model security services, you know, just the artifacts that should be there for monitor, all of them are created. I've seen in the past that sometimes some of the artifacts are missing or you're, you know, completely missing a menu item. And in that case, you really want to trace back and check your install logs, ensure everything was created successfully, because if something is missing here, then you have a very fundamental problem with your installation. There are a couple of host aliases that need to be correct, especially if you're in a clustered environment. Make sure that your host aliases are correct. If not, then, of course, you'll have trouble accessing your application. There are a couple of web server variables that are also created. You may want to check that the driver paths are correct. If your driver paths are not correct, of course, your JDBC providers will not be able to connect to the database. Also, there's a monitor emitter factory that's created. This is created usually after you've installed a monitor model. But you want to make sure that it is created and running. If not, then you can always just go ahead and create this yourself as well. And the way to get to it, of course, from the admin console is to browse to the service integration, CEI, and monitor emitter factories. And there you should find a monitor emitter factory if you have installed a model. Now, onto the dashboard server. There's some similar things that you need to look for on the dashboard server. The application that's most important is the REST proxy. The REST proxy resides on the dashboard server, and the REST service resides on the monitor server that we talked about previously. There are actually three custom JVM properties that need to be created. These are easy to mess up, and they need to point to your monitor server. The host names and the port names, you need to check that they are correct. If they're not pointing to your monitor server, you'll have problems with data movement, etc., and accessing your web dashboards. There's one JDBC provider that's created, the monitor DB provider, and there's one data source, the monitor database, that needs to be checked for verification. And, of course, another reminder is to install AlphaBlox prior to your portal. If you install portal before you install AlphaBlox, AlphaBlox is not able to communicate correctly with portal, and essentially you have to redo it. So, or it's a very long, complicated procedure to make it work. So to save yourself some headache, always remember to install AlphaBlox prior to WebSphere portal when you're installing it manually or outside of the install utility. Now, in the dashboard server, there are a few more components. There's, of course, the monitor portion of the dashboard server, then there's the AlphaBlox, and then there's the portal. So next step on our installation checklist for the dashboard server is the AlphaBlox portion of it. To ensure that your AlphaBlox components are working smoothly with monitor, the first thing you want to do is to log on to your AlphaBlox admin console. You want to make sure that you're A, able to log in, and B, that you can see the administration tab there. Once you've logged in, you want to click on the data sources, and there are two data sources that are created there for monitor. There is the monitor and then the monitor underscore cube. I've included some screenshots so that you know what they look like if for some reason you have to go by creating them manually. If for some bizarre reason you have to create all the data sources manually, there is one additional data source that needs to be created for AlphaBlox to work correctly. That is called a canned data source. But these two are directly monitor related. The third thing to check for AlphaBlox is if you log on to the WAS console, there is an application there called the AlphaBlox Platform App. You have to make sure that that is running and it is available to monitor. In this application, moving on to the next slide, slide 13, in the security roles, there are three security roles. For the AlphaBlox user and AlphaBlox developer, you will see that all authenticated is checked. However, for the AlphaBlox administrator, if you have LDAP security or even file-based security enabled, you want to make sure that the mapped user corresponds to your portal admin user. To save yourself some time and headache, it's always a good idea to, when you install AlphaBox, make sure that the admin name corresponds to your portal admin name to begin with. It's just easier that way. If not, then after you've enabled security, you would log on to your admin console for WAS, click on the AlphaBox platform application, click on Map Security Roles to User Groups, and then uncheck All Authenticated for the AlphaBox administrator and look for the user in your LDAP directory or your repository, whichever it is, and map the corresponding user for your portal admin to your AlphaBox administrator. That will make the communication between AlphaBox and portal seamless. Now, in addition to that, there are some environment variables, AlphaBox additional drivers, AlphaBox install directory. Make sure that these are pointing to the correct directories and drivers. Now, the portal portion of your dashboard install. In order to ensure that your portal components are working or have been installed correctly for your dashboard server to work, you want to log on to your portal admin console. In there, you have the portal management and applications. There are two applications that are installed. They have long, complicated names. I won't go over them, but you want to make sure that both of those are installed. One of them pertains to just the dashboard for monitor, and one of them pertains to the AlphaBox connection with monitor. So if you have AlphaBox, you have to make sure that that application is installed in portal in order for it to work with monitor. There are also two WAR files that are created that are installed into the web modules of your portal administrative console, the dashboard WAR, and again, the AlphaBox views WAR. Now, if for some reason these aren't there in your portal console, they're always available for you to install manually. If you, for some reason, uninstall them, things go awry, they're available in the installable apps directory. So each of these applications that I even mentioned earlier for the monitor server portion, they're all available for install in the directories. In the file structure, typically it's installableapps.wbm, and they have or scripts.wbm. All of these components are available for install from there. Another good thing to check when you've been logged onto your portal console is to check if the basic portlets are there, if your KPIs are there, alerts, just your basic portlets. This is actually a starting point or a good indicator that something's wrong. If your portlets aren't there, the next thing you want to do is backtrack. Check if your WAR files and your applications are there. If they aren't there, then the first thing you need to do is, of course, install them. And then you want to make sure if your AlphaBox is working and backtrack from there and make sure the applications for your monitor REST services and your other components for monitor dashboard are working. So that concludes the installation portion of the presentation. Moving on, we have the SIB portion. Now, the SIB, the good news is the SIB in version 6.1 is so much more better than it was in version 6.2. It was a long, complicated, manual procedure in version 6.2, and in version 6.1, everything is scripted and a lot happier. Now, to go about configuring the SIB, the first step is to create the local bus on the monitor server. Now, the local bus on the monitor server is typically created by the install wizard itself. But if not, there is a script for it that you can run that's in the scripts.wbm folder. You run this script, and then the next thing you do is move on to your CEI server. This would be what I will refer to as your remote bus. Your remote bus needs to be created. In order to do that, you first will copy and extract some plugins and run a config script. And after that pre-work is laid down, then you can run the config remote monitor bus script, and that creates the components and all the underlying components for the monitor SIB to be working seamlessly. We'll talk a little bit more about the underlying components. Now, in one thing I've noted while configuring the SIB is that the username on the monitor server for the console should be the same as the username to log on to the CEI server console. So if your CEI server has a different username than your monitor server, it will confuse the scripts. So what you would do to go about that or get around it is to log on to either your monitor server or your CEI server and create a new console user with administrative authority that corresponds to the other server so that you have at least one user that is a console user and has admin rights that is exactly the same on your monitor server and your CEI server. Once you've gone through these steps of first creating the local bus and extracting the plugins and running the remote bus script and corresponding everything, what you want to do is log on to your servers and look for the publish subscribe topology now consistent message. Also, you want to log on to your consoles, click on buses, click on your monitor bus, click on the messaging engines, and make sure that it is in a running state. You see the green arrow and it's running. Now, once all of this is configured, of course, you want to make sure that you restart the servers before everything works fine and dandy. Sometimes, some things may not work correctly seamlessly without a restart. Now, you want to ensure that your security level is the same on your monitor server and your CEI server. So if you have, for example, LDAP security enabled on your monitor server, you want to make sure that you have the same level of security enabled on your CEI server. Because if there is a mismatch in the security, the communication will not be seamless. And you also have to ensure that you have SSL security enabled. We'll talk a little bit more in detail about what the steps are in order to do that and what it entails. Configuring SSL on servers, slide 15. Now, to configure the SSL is almost a mandatory step. Whether you have LDAP security or not, you want to make sure that your SSL handshake between your monitor server and your CEI server is there, has been successfully enabled. In order to do that, you have to log on to your admin console and follow this long, complicated path that ends you in your signer certificates. There, you click on Retrieve from Port. Once you've clicked on Retrieve from Port, you are faced with a screen that looks like this. Here, you would enter your host name, your port number, and you would retrieve signer information, and after that, it basically creates a fingerprint for the server. Now, if you're on your CEI server, this would point to your monitor server. And if you're on your monitor server, this would point to your CEI server. So they need to have a fingerprint for the other server on themselves so that they can then communicate seamlessly. A few other things to note. If you click on your Manage Endpoint Security Configuration, you will click on your for inbound and outbound cell SSL settings and ensure that they're default. And for each node under the cell, you want to make sure you would click on the nodes. For example, you would click on your node here. That would take you to a screen here. Oops, let's go back. That would take you to a screen here, and you want to make sure that your override inherited values is unchecked. I've found that by default sometimes it can be checked, so that's a good thing to note. Effects of this not being followed would be, of course, some kind of SSL error in your logs and handshakes not working, and, of course, eventually your events will move across the SIB. So it's very important that these points are verified and checked before you send events across. So now the troubleshooting portion of the SIB. First thing that happens, or the most common thing that goes wrong with the SIB, is that the SIB won't start. This is kind of common to version 6.02 as well as version 6.1 and even as we move forward. Authentication data from the Interbus Messaging Engine authentication alias cannot be obtained. This is an error you will see if you have not configured your SSL handshake on your servers. So if you see an error like this, you would refer back to our slides, to my slides, and configure the SSL handshake. You may need to restart the server and to get that going, and then hopefully this error will go away. There is some more information on the info center as to what exactly needs to be done, the steps in details. So, point to be noted, server-to-server trust needs to be established when you have an SIV. If you have a single-cell environment, then this may not be an issue for you. All right, next, instances not visible in the dashboard. This is also a common issue that can happen, and there are various reasons for not seeing your data in the dashboard. In this slide, it's covering the SIB portion of it. In your logs, you would see it's not possible to create the Interbus connection, Monbus link to the messaging engine. So basically what it's trying to tell you is that it's not able to connect to the messaging engine for the server. That essentially means that your SIB link is not working. If your SIB link is not working, that means events will not move from your CEI server to your monitor server. If they won't move to your monitor server, they won't be consumed by monitor. They won't be consumed by monitor. They're never going to make it to the dashboard. So symptomatically, you will see nothing in your dashboard, and then you'd backtrack and realize, oh, my SIB is not working. The link is down. So you would try to troubleshoot it that way. So in review, in order to troubleshoot a scenario like this, you would first and foremost, ensure that the authentication level is the same on both ends of your SIB link. So if security is enabled on your CEI server, it should be enabled on your monitor server and vice versa. And you want to ensure that the SIB link is started on both ends. Note, not starting, but started. If it's starting, that's the equivalent to, you know, not started. Events will not move across unless it is in the started state. Another thing to note here is the foreign bus name. The foreign bus name should correspond to the local bus name of the other server. So that means in your monitor server, the foreign bus name should be the bus name of the CEI bus. And on the CEI server, the foreign bus name should be the monitor server bus name. And these names need to match exactly. Of course, the ports also need to be checked, the bootstrap endpoints for the SIB, whether it's secured or unsecured. So if you're in a secure environment and the ports happen to be pointing to an unsecured port, information will not flow through and vice versa. Last thing you want to check is the publish, subscribe, the policy not consistent. If you see that message 9 out of 10 times, you're probably in good shape. There are some scenarios where even after seeing that message, things are still not working. Things like that may be security related or other issues. You'd want to send in some trace files if that is the case. Now, I'd mentioned earlier that the scripts take care of all the underlying components for the SIB. A few points to note here are the foreign buses, the messaging engine, the SIB link. All of these are created automatically now with 6.1, whereas previously each of these components need to be created manually for the SIB. Okay. The SIB checklist. Again, the checklist is twofold. There's the CEI server portion of it, and then the monitor server portion of it. First, let's look at the CEI server portion of it. The first thing you want to do is to log on to your CEI server, your WAS console, and ensure that the bus is created. On the CEI server, the screen would look something like this. There are about 5 buses, and the bus you're looking for starts with monitor and then your cell name .bus. You would click on that, and it would take you to another screen, which is right here. And this is your messaging engine. Once you click on your messaging engine, you would have to ensure that your bus members are created. Your bus member is your local server. So on your CEI server, your bus member is the node name of your CEI server, and of course the type is server. You want to make sure that's up and running. Back up here in the messaging engine, you want to make sure that your messaging engine has a green arrow. It must be running in order for events to flow. Okay, moving down here, the foreign bus. The foreign bus name should be the bus name, the local bus name for your monitor server. So the cell name and the node name, all of this needs to be exactly the same as you can see on your monitor server. And here's a screenshot for the ports. Note there's an SIB endpoint address, and then there's an SIB endpoint secure address. So note that if you have security enabled, that you're using the correct port number. Now for the monitor server. Similar things to check for your monitor server. You want to log on to your WAS console, ensure that the remote bus is created, or rather the local bus is created, and that the name is correct. Like I said, this is typically created with the install wizard, and you don't really need to worry about it. So before you go about creating this manually, you want to log on to your monitor server and check if it isn't already created for you. The next thing to check is your messaging engine. This has to be in a state running. If it's not running, you want to stop right there and understand why via your logs. The bus member here is your node name or your local server for your monitor server. The type is, again, server. The foreign bus name should match the local bus name for the CEI server. So it's important that these names match so that they know how to point to each other. And speaking of knowing how to point to each other, they need a right port number. And the port numbers, again, you would verify them by logging onto your monitor server and clicking on the ports, and it will tell you what your SIB endpoint should be. You can log onto your SIB then, rather, click find your way through to the SIB, find the endpoint, and ensure that your port number is correct. Okay. So this takes us into slide 20, and that is the security portion of the presentation. Now, as you can see from this from this very big, complicated slide, that there are many components to the security, and it is a little trickier than it was in 602. And I'll talk about why and how to get about it in this slide. Now, when you go about enabling LDAP security, it's good to start in one place. Let's start in the dashboard server. That's a good place to start. Now, in order to enable security, you have to understand what the underlying components are. What are you enabling security on? In your dashboard server, if you have portal, that means you have WAS 602. And in order to enable security on portal, with 602, monitor 602, enabling security on portal was a little trickier. The recommended way was to go through your wp-config.properties file, and it was long, complicated, and hairy. With version 6.1, it's recommended to use the Enable Security Wizard for Portal. Essentially, you have to input all the same long, complicated names from your LDAP directory, from all your LDAP users, but it's a lot easier and cleaner because it's in a wizard format. So you would go through your Enable Security Wizard for Portal, and once that's done, you restart the servers and ensure, of course, before you go about enabling, that your portal admin server name and your WAS admin server name are already created in your LDAP directory. So that's pre-work before you enable security on your portal server. So once that's done on your dashboard server, the very next thing you want to check is your alpha blocks. You want to make sure that it's still working. You want to log on to your alpha blocks administrative console, see that you're able to log in, and if not, then you have to edit your server.properties, properties, map security rules and WAS, restart your servers, and essentially make sure that you're able to log on to the Alpha Blocks admin console and see the administrative tab. We'll talk about some of the symptoms and how to get about it, things to note in a couple of slides down. So once you have security enabled on your dashboard server, you want to jump on over to your monitor server. Now, your monitor server has an underlying WAS component of version 6.1. Enabling security on version 6.1 is slightly different. It's at least aesthetically different than it is on version 6.02. In version 6.02, you would just click on global security and then just fill out the components and you'd be good to go. In version 6.1, the menu items are slightly different, but essentially you're accomplishing the same thing. So, and you would go through your enable security on WAS 6.1, enable global security. Once that is done, then you can move on to your CEI servers or your BPEL servers. Here you want to note that there are some additional steps for your BPEL container applications, for your TAS container applications. We'll go through a little bit of detail as to what needs to be mapped, what security roles need to be mapped, and what needs to be checked and unchecked for your CEI servers. You would then go about enabling security on any of your other servers, your clusters, what have you. Once that is done, Note that all the securities are pointing to your your centralized user registry. This could be your Active Directory or your IBM Tivoli Directory server, what have you. With WAS 6.1, a couple of things to note here is that you could have multiple repositories. So you could have your local file-based repository, and also, additionally, you could have another repository pointing to, say, an Active Directory server. So that's something you have to bear in mind. Things to notice, you can't have the same exact username in both the repositories. So you would either use just one repository or ensure that users aren't repeated in various repositories, because then WAS doesn't know if you are logging in as, say, WAS admin, whether you want the WAS admin to authenticate from the file repository or the LDAP. So that's a point to note there from a WAS perspective. Once you have security enabled, you would also enable SIBUS security. It's fairly straightforward in version 6.1 and in 6.02. It's just a matter of filling out the right usernames and passwords. Once all is said and done, you want to take care of your LTPA keys. Now, the recommended way to do that is to export out of a WAS 6.02 if any of your BPEL servers or your dashboard server, if it's a WAS 6.02, export the LTPA keys out of one server, a WAS 6.02, and then transport that key file to all the other servers and then import it into your WAS servers there. It's a little easier to export out of 6.02 and import into 6.1. It's just aesthetically easier to do that, so that's why it's recommended. Otherwise, by all means, you can do it the other way around as well. 6.1 to 6.1, 6.02 to 6.1 doesn't make a difference. All right. Moving along. So enabling security on WAS 6.02. Like I said previously, we're all very familiar with this. You click on Global Security, check Enable Global Security, uncheck Java 2 Security. Once that is done, you click on your LDAP. Here you will fill out your LDAP settings, your LDAP server, port name, fully qualified username to log on to your LDAP server, domain names and all that. Once that is done, you would click on LTPA, fill out the LTPA, either export the keys or import the keys. You can also enable single sign-on. You would apply, restart your servers, and you should have working WAS 602 security. Okay, moving on. LTPA keys, like I mentioned, you would click on LTPA, type in the file name here, and export. Once you click on export, it will generate or create a file, and that file needs to be transported to your other servers and imported. Now, the good thing to note here is that if you hit generate keys again and you start getting LTPA key errors in your logs, you can always just redo it. So whatever you've imported last or is the key file that the WAS server will use. Here you can also click on single sign-on, fill out the little application or rather form there, and single sign-on then is enabled. Okay, so enabling security on WAS 6.1. Like I said, this is slightly different. It's basically accomplishing the same thing, but it is aesthetically different. When you click on your security for WAS 6.1, the first step is to click on the security configuration wizard. This is recommended. It's a little easier to go this route. Here, it's basically a short wizard with about four steps. You click on fill out the form. The only thing to note here to be careful about is to ensure that you use your repository, federated repository option, as opposed to your standalone LDAP option for the purposes of a monitor. You would write down your realm name, host name, port name. Realm name is, of course, your LDAP server. You make sure that you select automatically generate server identity. Then you would add a repository to your base realm, and that repository would have your LDAP host name, your port number, your bindDN, and all that. So this kind of corresponds to clicking on the LDAP in 6.02 and then filling out all the information for your LDAP. So you do that through a security configuration wizard. And the reason why it's done a little differently in WAF 6.1 is because there's added functionality in 6.1 to have additional repositories and use, you know, perhaps two or three repositories at the same time. So that's why there's the additional step here. Once this is done, the next thing to do is click on your federated repository configure. Here you would check enable application security, ensure that you have federated repository checked. You would fill out your WAS admin username and password. Note that the WAS admin username should already exist in your LDAP. That's the pre-work. Once that is done, you can go about importing your LCPA keys, and there's also the single sign-on option. The single sign-on portion of this, the only thing to note here is basically you just click here, and you would put your domain name in here, and then uncheck web inbound security attribute. This is checked by default, so that's a point to note. All right, moving forward, security role mappings for BPE containers, slide 24. In your BPEL server, or your CEI server, you have a bunch of applications installed for your BPC. The first that I'm going to talk about is the BPC Explorer. If you have the BPC Explorer installed and you then click on the security role mappings for that application in WAS, you will note that it has one user. It's called a web client user. And you want to make sure that all authenticated is checked. If it's not, you'd have trouble logging on. Right. Next is your BPE container and your task container. Each of these applications has the following security roles right here. In these security roles, three of them, the API user, the JMS API user, and the web client user, only three can be all authenticated. You want to make sure that you have all authenticated check for these three users. For the system administrator and the system monitor, for these two user roles, you want to select them and look up users and then map them to your WAS admin. If they're not mapped to the WAS admin, they'll have permission issues and authentication issues, and you won't be able to process your events and then move them to monitor. Now, moving on to monitor data security. This is a new concept for Monitor 6.1 and often confusing to clients. So there are a few key concepts that I want to cover here. Once you have gone through all the steps and all the hairy details of installing Monitor and then enabling the SIB and creating the SIB and enabling security in all your servers, and you seem to have no authentication errors in your logs, and you've finally gone through and survived all of that, after that, the additional step is the Monitor data security. Here, what you're essentially doing is assigning access rights for the models, the monitor models that you've installed. And the way that works is by understanding the key concepts. By default, you have the root resource group. The root resource group is exactly root. You create additional resource groups, but understand that they are just children of the root resource groups. So the resource groups essentially work in a tree structure. Now, in the key concepts here, I've noted members, roles, and resource groups. We've talked a little bit about the resource groups, the root resource groups, which by default have business manager access to all the installed applications. If you have LDAP security enabled, you want to make sure that you create new resource groups. Now, these groups don't really need to physically exist in your LDAP directory. You can name them anything you want. Once the groups are created, you add members to the group. The members, however, need to be physically existent in your LDAP. You would assign them, assign the groups or the users to the particular monitor resource group, which is an entity just in the admin console. Now, once you've added the users, assign them to a resource group, the resource groups then need to be assigned roles. So what you would do is you would log on, add users to the resource groups, click on the resource group, assign a model to your particular resource group, and then give it a role. The role can be one of four options. business manager, personal KPI manager, public KPI administrator, or KPI administrator. Business manager is the default role, and public KPI administrator is the most powerful role. So you would then assign the role. If you don't do all of this, you won't be able to see any of your models installed in Monitor in your dashboard. So you would essentially think, oh, where did all my data go? So in review, you have resource groups that need to be created as children of the root. Once the resource groups are created, you add users to the resource groups. Once users are added to the resource groups, you would select models and make them available to certain resource groups and assign the role for those models. All right. So troubleshooting all of these security issues. The first and foremost thing that might go wrong after you've enabled security is you can't see your deployed models in your dashboard. And, of course, the reason, as I just mentioned about that, is your monitor data security hasn't been enabled correctly. There's a little bit more detail in the Information Center link that I've included here. And what you would go about doing is, of course, logging onto your admin console, click on Monitor Data Security, and create the resource groups, add members, assign roles, and move forward. Once this is done, you should start to see your models in the dashboard. All right, moving on. Error when REST services connect to LDAP. In the logs, you would see entity is not in the scope of the defined realm. Now, this symptom is telling us that perhaps when you enabled security, the standalone LDAP option was checked instead of the federated repository check. So if you've checked standalone instead of federated, or rather chosen standalone instead of federated, after all is said and done, you will still see some errors in your logs, and this is the error that you would see. I've included a Information Center link for a little bit more detail as to how to go about. Troubleshooting-wise, in order to fix this, you would log onto your logs console, click on the configuration wizard, and ensure that you have federated repository checked instead of standalone. Restart your servers, ensure security is working fine and dandy. Once that is done, this error should go away. Okay, so on the dashboard server, sometimes it's very tricky to get the alpha blocks to work with the portal. The first thing you want to note after you've enabled security is to try to log on to your alpha blocks admin page. When you do that, you're faced with a dialog box where you have to add your username and password. And if your username and password is incorrect, of course, it won't let you log on. And the things to ensure that you've done correctly here is, of course, first go to your server.properties file located in this path. Here, there are a couple of properties that need to be edited. The properties are ws.admin.password.protected and ws.admin.username. You want to take off the protected and make it equal to your portal admin password and your portal admin username. Then you want to log on to your WAS, and in your AlphaBlocks platform application, click on Map Security Roles to User Groups and search for the same ID, WebServer Portal Admin ID, and assign that to the role, restart your servers, and then you should be able to log on to your AlphaBlocks admin page. Now, say that you got past that step in slide 29, and you can't see the admin tab on your AlphaBlocks admin page. This is an indication that your AlphaBlocks application, AlphaBlocks platform, doesn't have the correct security roles to user groups mapping. So you want to log on to your admin console, click on the AlphaBlocks platform app, and ensure that the correct user is assigned to your AlphaBlocks admin role. Sometimes this can happen if you have, something's cached in your browser. So if you think you've done everything correctly, a good thing to do would be, either clear your cache or try to access your AlphaBlocks admin page from another server which you haven't before. And it might resolve the issue. All right, moving along. GSP errors upon dashboard application starts. This actually comes up as a pretty hairy and scary error, fail to parse tag library. But in actuality, it's not really a functional problem. This is just some leftover error messages that have been resolved now. But if you are installing version 6.1 as opposed to 6.1.1 or 6.1.2, you may see this error message and worry about it. So the point of the slide is to not worry about it. It's not a functional issue. Just some leftover error messages that have been resolved now. Okay. Moving along to slide 31, error when using human task view. For example, in this scenario, you've installed a human task model, and once you're trying to work with the human task view, you get an error, unrecognized error while processing the event. This is also a product defect. And to get about this, you want to upgrade to version 6.1.1. There's a tech note that I've also linked to. So if you see an error, CWMR T0044E, something similar to this, try upgrading to version 6.1.1, and it should resolve your issue with the human task view. Okay, troubleshooting. Unable to add a cluster member. We've had quite a few issues with the template of the cluster member. The error you see when you try to add a cluster is matching template default WBM could not be found. Now, the message, again, doesn't indicate that there's a functional step, functional problem. There are a few steps that you need to follow as a workaround. Again, this is a defect. An APAR has been created, and I believe it's resolved by now. But in the meanwhile, in the interim, there are a few steps that you follow. I've seen customers follow these steps and move forward successfully. So just a few things that you need to remove from certain files, and then you're able to move right along. Okay. Unable to change range of KPI. Now, if you've finally gone through the installation and you've gone through the security and the SIB and you've installed your monitor model and events are coming over the SIB, you may see this error. You have selected a different KPI data type when you attempt to change the range of a decimal expression KPI. This is a defect, so no need to worry. I'm not sure as to if this is going into 6.1.2, but if this is a concern for you, please feel free to contact me, and I can definitely look into that for you. Right, and the cause for this is that the code assumes the data type of an expression KPI will be the type of its last reference rather than the result data type of the XPath expression. All right, so now some general troubleshooting tips. Typically, when you go about installing Monitor, one of the biggest issues that you come across is the events aren't visible in the dashboard, your models aren't visible, your events aren't there, your instances aren't coming in. Now, since Monitor installation is very componentized, there are very many components to it, and it's a long, complicated line of issues and links that might be broken, in order to troubleshoot an issue like this, you want to backtrack. So, symptomatically, what you would see is your instances aren't visible in your dashboard. First thing you want to check is your failed event sequence in your monitor server. That would mean that, okay, the events made it to the monitor server, but for some reason they're going into the failed event sequence rather than being successfully transferred to the dashboard and being processed. So if your failed event sequence is empty, that means, okay, the events might have made it across and or may not have made it across to the monitor model, so more investigation is required. Next thing you want to check is the queue depth for your monitor bus. So you want to browse to your buses, click on your monitor bus destinations, queue point, and in your runtime, you want to check the current message depth. Now, the current message depth can either be 0 or greater than 0. If it's greater than 0, that means that messages did make it across the SIB, so that's good. And monitor, for some reason, isn't able to consume them. So in this scenario, you want to gather your trace logs and open up a PMR. If the depth is 0, that means two things. Either the events didn't make it across the SIB, or the events were somehow processed, perhaps, by monitor and discarded, or they went into the failed event sequence. So a good thing to check here, actually, is to actually switch off your monitor model. In other words, stop your monitor model, send events from your CEI server, from your application to monitor, and see if the queue depth piles up. If the queue depth piles up, what will happen is events will be coming across the SIB from your CEI server to the monitor server, but since your monitor model is not running, the events will not be consumed. So your depth will increase for your queue. Then the next step is to turn on your monitor model and see if the events are consumed. That will tell you if, A, your events are making it across the SIB, and B, if monitor is somehow consuming them and discarding them or consuming them successfully. So if they're being consumed by monitor, then you want to check your trace logs and see what's happening to the events after monitor is consuming them. If the events did not make it across the SIB, then you have to go back to your CEI server and do a little backtracking there and understand why. So in order to do that, you would go onto your CEI server, log onto the admin console, and browse to your CBE event browser, click on all events, and see if the events are even being generated by your BPEL app. If they're not being generated, if you don't see any events being emitted, that means there's probably something wrong with the application. Is your application set to emit events? You want to check your app then. If they are, then you want to look at your SIB. Can you see the publishing topology now consistent message? Is your SIB up and running? Is the messaging engine up and running? Are the foreign bus links, foreign bus names, and your SIB link, are they all up and running? If not, then you want to check your SIB, verify all the steps, go back to my SIB checklist, see if all those components are there. So that will sort of componentize where your events are and what's going on with them. So moving on, if you see any sort of security issues, you want to review your system outlook. That's the first place to start. Typically, security issues and authentication error messages are fairly straightforward. They tell you what's wrong, and it's pretty intuitive as to what you need to do. In some cases, it may not be. For example, for your SSL, sometimes the errors are not that straightforward. For your LCPA, usually they're pretty straightforward. It will give you an LCPA token error. Sometimes the tokens expire, re-import them, and you should be good to go. A good thing to note here, if you have LDAP security enabled for Portal, a good way to check your very basic LDAP connectivity is to go to your Portal home config, run the WPS config task with a validate LDAP task, and see if it doesn't fail. If it fails, then you have a very basic problem with your security, either your username, your bind ID, your port name, something's not working right there, and running this task itself will tell you which portion of your LDAP security is not working. So it gives you pretty good feedback. So if you've gone through all of those steps, you've and still not able to see why your events aren't coming, or for any other reason something's wrong with your monitor server, what you want to do is enable tracing. I've included here some trace settings that you can use. There's quite a few, or sometimes you can just say com.ibm.wbimonitor.star equals all. That will just give you everything. You can also trace a specific model by selecting groups and then changing the trace level in the model and the version of the list provided. So if you've ensured your SIB is working correctly and there's no other issues that I might have already covered in here, what you want to do is gather screenshots and a detailed description of your topology, your environment, and the symptoms of the issues, and then perhaps find a tech node, look at the info center, and then finally open a PMR. And in order to move the PMR swiftly and forward, it's good to have trace logs with the correct trace settings, screenshots, detailed description of your topology, you know, how many boxes, what's installed and what's the OS level and all that, and of course symptoms of the issue so that we can help you the best we can. Just some log locations here included for everybody's and some references. So that concludes my presentation for today. I think I'll turn it over to Elijah to pull some questions, et cetera, now.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Web Series Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thank you, Fizar, for presenting today.
Thank you.